Hi, my name is Lynn Goldstein, and today I'm going to be talking first about probiotics and then about enzymes. So I'm going to start with probiotics, which means for life, and they are dietary supplements or bacteria found in food which contain potentially beneficial bacteria or yeast. They are formally defined as live microorganisms, which when administered in adequate amounts confer a health benefit on the host. And basically that means when we either consume these via food or supplement, they give us some sort of health benefit. Lactic acid bacteria is the most common type of microbe or bacteria used, and it has been used in the food industry for many years, most often thought of as yogurt. The reason they've used these types of bacteria is because they're able to convert sugars, which is including lactose and other carbohydrates, into lactic acid. This conversion basically provides the characteristics of the sour taste that we find in fermented dairy products such as the yogurt. It does that by buffering the pH and creating fewer opportunities for spoilage organisms to grow. There are approximately 400 different strains of these bacteria that exist in nature, and we are learning more and more, but basically each of them have their own sort of use and reaction on the body. The most common strains that we find in the probiotic bacteria are Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium, but within each of those two groups, there are separate subgroups, so you will always see a second word after that name. For example, Lactobacillus acidophilus or Lactobacillus GG, and those are sub-strains within the two categories of Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium. There's also a few common probiotics that are yeasts and actually are not bacteria but are yeasts. The most common one known is something called Saccharomyces boulardii, and I'll mention that one a little later on when I'm talking about digestive diseases. But before we can go on and talk about what probiotics are, it's better to understand a little bit about what is our gut flora and what that means. In our large intestine, or our colon as it's more commonly known, there is a miniature ecology of microbes, collectively known as the gut flora. In fact, our body actually has more bacteria than it does human cells. The world is full of microorganisms, and so are our bodies, both in and on our skin, in our gut, and in all of our orifices. But friendly bacteria are vital to the proper development of our immune system and to protecting our body from other microorganisms that cause disease. We also need these bacteria to help with the digestion and absorption of food. So this bacteria that we have in our large intestine, this gut flora, is actually good bacteria. We want it there. And everybody's personal bacteria mix is very basically individualized, and there's really no sort of rhyme or reason as to why or how that happens, but there's not one, you know, everybody's numbers are different, and the interaction between a person and the microorganisms in their body can be crucial to the person's health and well-being. There are a number of bacterial types that are thought to be able to be thrown out of balance by many different things. The reason this can happen first and foremost by antibiotics or other medications, excessive amounts of antibiotics are known, just as probiotics means for life, antibiotics means against life. And antibiotics, as all of you know, are used to kill off bacteria, and we take them to kill off bad bacteria or bacteria that's making us sick. But they also kill off good bacteria as well. Also, our gut flora can be thrown off by excessive alcohol intake, by stress, other diseases, and by exposure to toxic substances. When this happens, the bacteria that works with our body decreases in number, and that allows harmful bacteria to thrive, which leads to many different digestive disorders and other ailments. The maintenance of our healthy gut flora is dependent on many factors, and that's also including the quality of the food that we eat. Including a significant proportion of probiotic foods in the diet has been demonstrated to support a healthy gut flora and may be another means of achieving the desirable health benefits that we hear about with probiotics. So it's not just by taking a pill, but also eating the foods, and I'm going to talk later on about foods and probiotics and how that works, but by including a diet that has foods rich in these bacteria. The probiotic bacterial cultures are intended to assist the body's naturally occurring gut flora to reestablish themselves, and that's why we use them. So really, what are the benefits? There's many, many benefits to taking probiotics that are currently being studied, and I'm going to list a whole bunch of them, and then I'm going to talk more specifically about a few. So the majority or the health benefits that we find with probiotics include improving our digestive health, improving urinary and genital health, improving resistance to pathogens, infections, and inflammation, improving nutrient bioavailability, which basically means improving how much nutrients we absorb from our food. It improves the management of atopic allergies, helps the synthesis of certain vitamins like niacin, folic acid, biotin, and B6. Probiotics have also been known to treat many digestive disorders such as IBS, Crohn's, and colitis. Probiotics also decrease there's a certain infection. It's called Clostridium difficile, or more commonly known as C. diff, and it's a very severe bacterial infection that occurs. Most people pick it up in hospitals. It's commonly known for someone that has a long hospital stay to pick up something like this, but it's not the only place that you do get it. But it's once you have this bacteria, it's very difficult to get rid of it, and it causes very bad side effects, so awful diarrhea, pain, bloating, to name a few. So we know that using probiotics with other forms of medical treatment has helped to decrease the infection with this type of bacteria. Probiotics also help to prevent and treat something known as pouchitis. Pouchitis is a condition that can happen after a surgery of removal of the colon. Not something that happens all the time, but it's something that can occur. Probiotics also help to prevent and treat atopic dermatitis in children, or otherwise known as eczema in children. We also know that probiotics do help improve lactose intolerance, and I'll explain that a little bit later, but basically, for someone who is lactose intolerant, sometimes they can tolerate dairy or yogurt as a form of dairy. We also know that probiotics may decrease serum cholesterol levels, and it reduces the risk of certain cancers like colon and bladder. So a lot of really great health benefits by using these bacteria both in our diet and through supplement form. Another interesting thing about probiotics stems from the fact that there are cells in and around our digestive tract that are very connected to our immune system. And one theory is that if you alter the microorganisms in a person's intestinal tract, you can directly affect their immune system defense. There is, unfortunately, no published evidence or real proof that probiotic supplements are able to replace a body's natural flora when they've been killed off. It is hoped that probiotics do form beneficial temporary colonies, which may assist the body in the same function as natural flora, and that at the same time allows the natural flora time to recover from its depletion. If the conditions which originally caused damage to the natural gut flora persist, however, the benefits obtained from the probiotic supplementation will be short-lived. So basically, it's useful in helping sort of for a short period, but if you're either taking excessive alcohol, for example, or excessive antibiotics, the things that are naturally killing off that natural gut, if that is not taken away, the benefits of probiotics will be short-lived, because ultimately the goal is to replenish and reflourish your natural gut. So I'm going to go over some of those health benefits a little more specifically and talk about how and why we think this works. First is managing lactose intolerance. In practice, probiotics have not been specifically targeted or used for this purpose, but we do know as lactic acid bacteria actively convert lactose into lactic acid, ingestion of certain active strains may help lactose intolerant individuals tolerate more lactose than they would have otherwise. So for people that really like dairy but can't tolerate it, this might be a really good alternative for them to try, is using these supplements or foods that, or dairy foods that contain probiotics to help them enjoy the dairy that they enjoy. The next one I want to discuss is the prevention of colon cancer. What we know is, in laboratory investigations, some strains of lactic acid bacteria have demonstrated anti-cancer effects. One reason is that they are thought to be able to bind with a particular chemical called heterocyclic amines. These are basically substances that have formed on cooked meat. Red meat is the biggest type of meat that's affected by these particular carcinogens when cooked. And what we found is that using probiotics seems to prevent the body from having contact, or these chemicals from having contact with the colon wall. Also, most human trials have found that the strains tested may exert an anti-carcinogenic effect by decreasing the activity of a certain enzyme that comes from another type of bacteria called E. coli that can generate carcinogens in the digestive system. Lower rates of colon cancer among higher consumers of fermented dairy products have been observed in population studies. So there are some good studies that have shown that using foods that contain probiotics or supplements that have probiotics do have an impact in our rates of colon cancer. We also find that probiotics may lower cholesterol, which is also a wonderful benefit to them. We find that in animal studies, they've demonstrated that probiotics might be able to lower serum cholesterol levels. And the thought process behind this is that probiotics help break down bile in the gut, thus inhibiting its reabsorption. And when it's reabsorbed into the bloodstream, it's done that as cholesterol. Bile is produced by the liver and put out by the gallbladder and is needed for the digestion of fats. But part of bile is cholesterol, and our body reabsorbs it once it's the rest that's not used that goes through the small intestines. We tend to reabsorb it, and it is reabsorbed as cholesterol. So we find that probiotics may actually break that down and help get rid of it instead of reabsorbing it. Some, but not all, human trials have shown that dairy foods fermented with this bacteria can produce modest reductions in total and LDL cholesterol. And LDL cholesterol is the bad cholesterol. It's known as the bad cholesterol. But these studies have typically been shown in people that already have normal cholesterol levels. What we really need to do is have studies on people that already have elevated cholesterol levels and see if we can't bring it down a little bit with using probiotics. We find that probiotics are helpful in improving immune system function and preventing infection. This lactic acid bacteria is thought to have several beneficial effects on the human immune system. First, they protect against pathogens by means of competitive inhibition. What this basically means is it competes for growth. So as you have a lot of the good bacteria in your body, it inhibits the growth of bad bacteria, therefore preventing the body from getting sick. There is evidence to suggest that probiotics may improve immune system function by increasing the number of certain types of immune system cells, such as the IgA-producing plasma cells, the T lymphocytes, and our natural killer cells. And these are all cells that are part of our immune system that fight off disease. Clinical trials have demonstrated that probiotics may decrease the incidence of respiratory tract infections and dental caries in children. Also, probiotic foods and supplements have been shown to be effective in the treatment of and prevention of acute diarrhea, and also will help decrease the severity and duration of something called the rotavirus. The rotavirus is a very common infection in children that causes very bad diarrhea. And in addition to that, it helps reduce the severity and duration in diarrhea known as traveler's diarrhea in adults. There is a bacteria that's known as H. pylori that is responsible for the causing of peptic ulcers. And once you have H. pylori, it first causes a lot of very unpleasant side effects, and it's also very difficult to get rid of. We have shown in studies that using probiotics in addition to standard medical treatment has been helpful in getting rid of the H. pylori infection much quicker, which is a really great thing because, as I said, it's a very difficult one to get rid of. There, as I talked a little bit about antibiotics earlier and how they are anti-life, meaning they kill off all bacteria, both good and bad. But there are also, other than that, some side effects to antibiotics, and which typically known as antibiotic-associated diarrhea. And it has been shown that taking antibiotics or taking probiotics along with your antibiotics, if you need antibiotics, helps decrease the side effect. So that is another benefit to taking the two of them together, as well as the probiotics benefit as far as helping protect, keep your natural gut flora alive while you're on antibiotics. Probiotics have been shown to reduce inflammation. Lactic acid bacteria foods and supplements have been found to modulate inflammatory and hypersensitivity responses in the body. Clinical studies have shown that probiotics may prevent reoccurrences of inflammatory bowel diseases, and as well as improve milk allergies and decrease the risk of atopic eczema in children, which is an inflammatory process. Probiotics also improve nutrient absorption. The first thing is mineral absorption is one of the ones that we see. It is thought that the probiotic lactobacilli may help correct malabsorptions of trace minerals typically found in people with diets high in foods, whole grains, nuts, and legumes that have a high phytate content. And as we know, diets with whole grains, nuts, and legumes is very healthy. But in addition to that, unfortunately, these types of foods do contain phytates, and phytates do block certain minerals from being absorbed. So this may be something that can be improved with the use of probiotics. Also, which is a really interesting one and very hard to study, is that probiotics may prevent harmful bacteria growth under stress. As we all know, stress has an amazingly negative impact on the body in so many ways. And one of the ways we see that that happens is an under stress, you may have, it allows harmful bacteria more ability to grow. What they've found is in certain studies that they've done on rats fed probiotics had little occurrence of harmful bacteria latched onto their intestines compared to rats fed with sterile water. So that's an interesting one to watch and see what happens in the use of probiotics with people under stress. I left this for last because it's probably one of the biggest ones and the one that I use the most, and that is using probiotics with digestive disorders. There are many studies that have shown that using these probiotics helps in colitis, Crohn's, IBS. First, there's a strain called Lactobacillus plantarum, and it was found to help people with IBS symptoms. There's also a strain called Lactobacillus GG. It's known on the shelves as a brand called Culturelle, and that one has also been used quite often in people with IBS symptoms and shown some very good improvement. There is a combination of probiotic strains. It's known as VSL number 3, and that has been shown to be helpful in treatment of ulcerative colitis. And going back to that yeast that I mentioned earlier in the call, known as Saccharomyces boulardii, that one has been studied and shown to be very beneficial for people with Crohn's disease. So with using probiotics, I use them quite often for many of the people that I work with digestive disorders, and they tend to help in many situations. And I wanted to bring up the next thing before I go on to enzymes. I wanted to talk a little bit about something called synbiotics. It is possible to increase and maintain a healthy bacterial gut flora by increasing certain types of food in the diet that are known as prebiotic. Prebiotic basically means, in some ways, food for the probiotic. These types of foods help increase or help the probiotics flourish in the gut. Diets that are high in inulin, raw oats, and unrefined wheat are very helpful in this. Inulin is a dietary fiber. It's naturally occurring in many foods, most often found in leeks, artichokes, asparagus, onions, garlic, bananas, wheat, rye, and chicory root. It's also used as an added fiber in foods. You'll often see it on labels as something labeled as FOS, those three letters, and what that stands for is fructooligosaccharides. Not a word you really have to remember, but you will see FOS on many yogurt labels now. And FOS is known as a prebiotic, which, like I said, is technically what's called food for the probiotic. So how this works is, as probiotics are mainly active in the small intestine and prebiotics are only effective in the large intestine, and the combination of the two gives what's known as a synergistic effect. And this combination of the two is what's called synbiotics. And so they're starting to use the combination of the two in many foods, and you'll see them very often now in yogurts. So speaking of probiotics in food, I want to talk the last few couple of minutes about probiotics. I want to talk about how we use them in foods, because it's a great type of category of food to help your clients add to their diet that will improve any digestive disorders. So as I mentioned in the beginning, probiotics have been used to make fermented foods for years, and they're what's responsible for creating that sour taste that we commonly experience in these foods. The most common foods that we find include yogurt, pickled vegetables, fermented bean paste, kefir, kimchi, kombucha, sauerkraut, soy sauce, and tempeh are the most common, but there are many more than that as well. But incorporating probiotics into food is no easy task, especially in non-dairy foods. Probiotics are extremely sensitive to heat, humidity, pH levels, and oxygen. To ensure viability, refrigeration is needed, and exposure to oxygen and humidity needs to be limited. dairy foods are really the ideal delivery vehicle for probiotics. Probiotic fermentation enhances the flavor and texture of dairy foods, which is one of the reasons they use them. Dairy foods buffer stomach acids and bile, thereby protecting the probiotics from the destruction by the stomach acid. One of the biggest problems about getting these bacteria down into the large intestine where they're beneficial is that they have to get through the stomach acid to do so, and it often gets killed off in that place. In addition, dairy foods and probiotics appear to have a synergistic effect. For example, some studies indicate that something called lactoferrin, which is located, it's a chemical in dairy foods, may enhance bifidobacteria growth. So there again is that synergistic effect, one helping out the other. Perhaps the most successful probiotic, obviously yogurt, as I've mentioned a couple of times. The standard identity for yogurt requires fermentation with two different bacteria. One's called Lactobacillus bulgaricus, and the other is S. thermophilus. These are starter bacteria, and they're not the bacteria that we know of when we're talking about using probiotics to help digestive disorders. They are just starter bacteria for food. So not every yogurt is going to necessarily be helpful in improving digestion. It may be helpful in helping that toleration of the lactose, but other than that, it's not going to really do much if it has just these two bacteria in it. They need to have other cultures. So when you look at the back of a yogurt label and you see many different cultures listed, that's going to be more beneficial than when you just see these two. Yogurt has some beneficial effects and properties that's not found in fluid milk, including improved gastric emptying, lactose digestion, and immune system functionality. The calcium in yogurt is also more easily available by the body, and yogurt produces fewer atopic allergy symptoms than fluid milk. So in a lot of ways, yogurt is a really great food instead of milk for people that either don't tolerate or if they're trying to use dairy to increase their calcium. Yogurt's actually a better option than fluid milk. It is critical that the organisms in yogurt be alive and active during its shelf life to be useful for the health benefits. Therefore, pasteurization is often results in the death of many of the microorganisms. And for this reason, organic yogurt, especially those containing those prebiotics, the FOS that I mentioned, are preferable. However, probiotics are actually more stable in milk because yogurt has rather than yogurt because of the near pH level in the milk, so the near neutral pH level. So yogurt is more acidic, therefore it's more difficult to keep the probiotic strains alive. So that is everything I want to say as far as probiotics. There's a lot more research coming out. We are learning all the time how these different bacteria affect our body, and I use them quite a lot in my practice and with my patients with digestive disorders, and I'm happy to share that information with you today. The next section of this talk is going to be on enzymes, specifically digestive enzymes, and how they work in the body. So the definition of an enzyme is a protein that acts as a catalyst on one or more reactions in the body. It accelerates chemical reactions. Enzymes, we have enzymes for every single reaction in our body. They're absolutely needed to get things done, basically. You can think of an enzyme as a key that unlocks a reaction, and without that key, the reaction doesn't happen or happens at a much slower rate than wanted. So therefore, that's how enzymes function throughout the body. When we're talking about the digestive system, we refer to those enzymes as digestive enzymes. And digestive enzymes are enzymes in the alimentary or the what's known as the alimentary tract or the digestive tract that breaks down food so that the organism can absorb the nutrients from it. The main sites of action are the oral cavity or the mouth, the stomach, and the small intestine. They are secreted by many different glands along our digestive tract. You have the salivary glands, which act in the mouth, the glands of the stomach, and the glands of the pancreas. So before I go into specific enzymes, I want to explain a little bit on how and why they're needed. Basically, all foods come, whether it's carbohydrates, proteins, or fats, they all exist in a certain form that our body can't absorb. When we talk about digestion, we have to talk about digestion and absorption, because digestion basically means the swallowing of the food and putting it through the digestive system. But to actually utilize that food, we need to absorb it, which means it has to go from our small intestines through the lining to our bloodstream to be carried throughout the body. So that's the digestion and absorption piece. Well, when we swallow a piece of food, for example, a piece of meat, say take a piece of chicken, for example, you don't obviously absorb it in that whole form that we visually see it as. Protein goes into our bodies in long chains of amino acids. And our body needs to break down these long chains into single amino acids for them to be absorbed. And that's where the enzymes come in. The enzymes do the breaking down. Without the enzymes, we don't break down the food. Without breaking down the food, we don't absorb the food. So not just protein, all foods have this need, basically. Carbohydrates come in what's known as simple sugars or monosaccharides and disaccharides. Monosaccharides and disaccharides mean one or two sugar units together. And then you have polysaccharides, poly meaning many, and that's what we know as our fibers and our starches, and that's many sugar molecules linked together. This is also true of fats. Fats in our diet or in the food that we eat are typically in a form called triglycerides, which is three fatty acid molecules with a glycerol or sugar backbone. So all of these different large molecules need broken down into their smaller form for us to be able to absorb them, and that's where enzymes come in. So it starts in the mouth or the oral cavity. We secrete through the salivary gland something called salivary amylase. So when we chew our food and our saliva is put out, in that saliva is an enzyme called salivary amylase. Amylase is the enzyme that starts the digestion of starch or carbohydrate. And it starts breaking down as we chew, it starts breaking down that carbohydrate into smaller units of sugar. As you go down through the digestive tract, there's no enzymes in the esophagus, so the food just passes through into the stomach. The main enzyme in the stomach is known as pepsin, and pepsin is secreted through the gastric glands in the stomach. Pepsin is the enzyme that starts the breakdown of proteins into its smaller fragments. Once foods pass through the stomach into the small intestine, that's where majority of the food is digested and broken down. Most enzymes that we think of when we're talking about digestive enzymes come from the pancreas. The pancreas is a small little organ at the base of the small intestine. It's a very little organ that has a lot of work to do. And the pancreas is our main digestive gland in the body, and it secretes different enzymes. We have trypsin and chymotrypsin. Those are two different enzymes that can basically finish the job that the pepsin started, and those break down the protein. You've got lipase. Lipase is the enzyme that starts the breakdown of those triglycerides into the three fats and glycerol background. You've got what's known as pancreatic amylase. Just as I talked about salivary amylase, pancreatic amylase basically finishes the job of breaking down starches in the body. We also have bile from the liver. As I mentioned when I was talking about probiotics, bile is not necessarily an enzyme, but it's needed to work with the enzyme. It's produced by the liver. It's put out by the gallbladder, and it emulsifies fat. When you think of fat, we obviously know that oil and water don't mix. Fat is a little bit different than any other substance that goes into our body because it doesn't mix very well. So bile basically emulsifies fat, allowing the enzymes to get through and do their work. So bile emulsifies the fat and allows those lipases where the enzyme that digests or helps break down the fat, do their job and break down those fatty acids and glycerol backbone. When talking about carbohydrate enzymes, we've got a couple different ones. You've got the amylase, as I mentioned, that's what breaks down our starches, but then we have our other saccharides, our more simple sugars. One is sucrase, and that breaks down sucrose. Sucrose is typically known as our table sugar, breaks it down to its two units, glucose and fructose. You've got maltase, that breaks down into maltose is a type of sugar that has two glucose units linked together, and it breaks so maltase is the enzyme that breaks down maltase into our single glucose units. And then we have the most common one we think of is one called lactase, and lactase, of course, breaks down lactose, which is the sugar found in dairy products, into the two units that makes that up, which is glucose and galactose. Now, enzymes, for the most part, everybody who is healthy and has a healthy functioning gut puts out enough enzymes to digest our food as needed. The only one that obviously creates a little bit of a problem is the lactase. Lactase is typically the one that's found in babies. Babies have plenty of it, usually. It's very, very rare that you would find a baby that's lactose intolerant. Milk allergy is a different thing than lactose intolerant. But babies typically do that because babies are drinking milk. As we get older, very often we lose that enzyme, and that's where lactose intolerance comes in. And you can either have none of the enzyme, which means you're very, very lactose intolerant, which you'll have a lot of side effects, or you might just have a little bit. So you may be able to tolerate small amounts of dairy products, but not large amounts of dairy products. But the rest of our enzymes, for the most part, as long as you are a healthy, functioning adult, the pancreas works just fine, and it puts out plenty of enzymes. This is only a problem for someone that does have some sort of pancreatic disease, such as pancreatic cancer or pancreatitis. When you have pancreatic cancer, often you will have either a blockage of the pancreatic duct, so the enzymes cannot get out, or you've had surgery and something called a Whipple procedure, and that basically means, for the most part, means removal of the pancreas. So it's removing that organ from our body. Therefore, you cannot create any enzymes. Oftentimes, when you have surgery to the digestive tract, like the small intestine, if you've got some portion of it removed, the rest of the intestines take over and kind of make up for it and absorb the food as close to as it used to do. But this does not happen when you remove the pancreas. So when you remove the pancreas, there's nothing else in the body that's saying, okay, we're going to take over and make those enzymes. This is when this becomes a problem. But fortunately, we are able to take oral digestive enzymes in this scenario. And when people are, for example, someone who has had that Whipple procedure or the removal of the pancreas, they just take oral enzymes with each of their meals, and that helps digest their food more appropriately. So that is my lecture to all of you on probiotics and enzymes. And, of course, when it comes to enzymes, it's a much more detailed, complicated system, but hopefully this gives you a little bit of the base and the nuts and bolts of how our digestion process works when it comes to the use of enzymes. Hopefully you learned a little bit more about probiotics and enzymes today. Thank you.